Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome to First Unitarian Church of Alton. My name is Sabrina, and I welcome you in this community of hope and transcendence. Here, we seek wisdom beyond our experience. Here we open our loving minds to the mystery of wonder and the moral imagination. Here we transcend the day-to-day of our lives to seek for truths both meaningful and sustaining. Here we seek to offer a loving message that provides wholeness in a broken world. We are Unitarian Universalists. I offer my welcome to you, and in particular to those who are first-time visitors. We invite you to fill out one of the visitor cards found in the back of your gray hymnal and place it in the offering plate or give it to an usher. And we'll send you a church newsletter for the next 3 months to let you know about the programs and activities here at church. We're glad you are here, and we hope to see you on following Sundays. We do have a nursery for infants and young children under the age of 4 through these doors to the left in the first room past the foyer. If you don't know where it is, we'll point to it. Religious education classes for school-age children and youth will start back in, I want to say, mid-September. At the front, here we have a spirit chair, which includes activities for all ages. If you feel more comfortable with your hot hands busy and don't have anything, please take an activity back to your seat. And we welcome everyone into this home of comfort, spirit, justice, and hope. We have a couple of announcements. A couple of them are from Mary Johnson. Mary, over here. We will be having a cleanup work day next Saturday, August 20th, to tidy up the building prior to our church new year startup. We'll be working from 9:30 a.m. to 2 p.m., so if you can give at least an hour between those times, please come to share the workload. I'm adding, if you can come for the whole time, great. A list of needed tasks will be available for you to choose from. So, great. One time we got to move the thing where we put the name tags. That was awesome. Next Sunday, August 21st, most of our Sunday service will be streaming a video from the worship service given at the Sunday morning service at the Unitarian Universalist General Assembly last June in Columbus, Ohio. 10 o'clock is our new service starting time, but we'll begin the in-gathering songfest with songs from General Assembly at 9:55, 5 minutes before 10. The sermon title is All in Thy Getting, Get Understanding, given by Reverend Nancy Ladd. And I have one more announcement from Robin, and that is that apparently the basil has a bumper crop. And so if anybody wants it or wants to make pesto and gather it after service, it's on that side of the garden of the church, right? Right? And it's there. We have scissors that may or may not work. So okay. Prelude. I haven't done this in a while.
Thank you.
Today's opening words come from the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., and you should know these: darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that. Casey is going to light our chalice today in memory of her mother, Karen Coombs, who taught her how to see worth and dignity in everyone. Please join me as we say the chalice lighting words. We light this chalice, symbol of Unitarian Universalism. May it remind us of the divine spark in all of creation, the power of love to heal what is broken, and to be grateful for life's blessings each day. I do too. I'm digging the Simon and Garfunkel preludes. So please rise in body and or spirit for our first hymn. It's number 151 in the Gray Hymnal, "I Wish I Knew How." Each week, we take time to recognize the joys and sorrows, the celebration and struggles of this community. We do this by taking a stone or more from the bowls as we enter, from the bowl here on the chancel, or from that bowl. There's a lot of bowls. We allow the stones to bring us into awareness of those things most important in our life. Through thought or meditation, We then place them in the cleansing waters of this community, which include a little bit of the water collected from our annual water communion. If you have joy, sorrow, celebrations, struggles, or concerns that you wish to recognize, you're invited to come forward now in the ritual of joys and sorrows. I'm placing a stone in the bowl for those who are not here today, couldn't be here, and one for everyone else in the world that has joy, sorrows, or struggle. Some 7 billion people out there, just like me and you. So today we're doing it a little bit differently, and I trust you guys. We also are going to do the offertory at this moment, because then I have a whole thing later. So there is no words for the offertory. The ushers will come, and we each receive from this church the opportunity to explore meaning, purpose, and value in our lives. How does the money you give reflect what you receive? How does your collective money transform all within and beyond our congregational walls? This morning's offering will be gratefully received, may be lovingly given.
Thank you.
Please join me in reciting the offertory blessing to the work of the church, which is weaving a tapestry of love we call community. We dedicate ourselves, and these are offerings. The reading today is from a book called Acedia and Me by Kathleen Norris. Acedia is also known as sloth, not the animal, but a specific type of spiritual laziness or demotivation is one of the capital sins in Catholic religion. But it's not really well understood. However, Kathleen Norris does a really good job in her book where she records her personal struggle with depression, acedia, her marriage, and her willingness to live her best life. One can never be sure, that's not now. One can never be sure whether indifference is an aspect of sloth, acedia, or a perceptual intellectual deficiency, a certain blindness in human beings, as William James called it. Whatever we call it, we might admit that given the condition of our world, to transcend one's own self-centeredness is not a virtue, but a saving necessity. We might also apply some common sense. Discouragement is not necessarily a sign of illness, for people are often discouraged for good reasons. Feeling off balance and ill at ease may be a sign of sanity, just the goad one needs to face a bad situation. A friend, a professor of philosophy, observes that many depressives accurately perceive that they are living under conditions in which any reasonable person might be despondent. But, she asks with her customary acuity, can the same be said of acedia? Now, slide. So one of the emails I got recently that outlined the preaching calendar for the year pointed out that this month is all about wanderer. And I didn't know this when I was preparing my sermon, or sermonettes, as you will see. But I think it fits really perfectly. Because wonder, as Ed reminded me when I told them, is what you experience when you plant a seed and you see it grow. How that all happens, yes, we can sketch out the biochemistry of it if we want to. We can look at the plant biology if we want to, but really putting a seed in the ground and seeing it come up is a miracle. Wonder is for us that don't really cotton to really regular religious terminology is the same as a miracle, right? So what I want to talk to you about is something that made me really happy. I have been going through a hard time psychologically, nothing bad, you know, like nothing hard, and I don't work in the salt mines, you know. But over the last year and a half, I haven't felt right. And recently, I've come out of that. Was it a seed yet? We don't know. What made me happy was a scene of a picnic, and I want to thank Isabella for drawing these things as I was telling her these stories. So I want to share with you the story that made me come out of this. And I want to share with you because I think it's important, and maybe some of you can help me out too. So this picnic that I'm talking about that made me so happy occurred August 15th, so that's tomorrow, 1534 in Paris. And so there were a bunch of Spanish people having a picnic in Paris. and celebrating their friendship and celebrating the fact that they had made a promise to follow up on their spiritual development. Those of you familiar with the Catholic religion are starting to think, what was that? But so what? Somehow, this seemed very meaningful for me because it was a very human depiction of coming out of a spiritual struggle. And so let me tell you a little bit more about my spiritual struggle. Because I trust you, I'm going to tell you the truth. Frankly, I was a little bit burned out from being on the board for 3 years. That's not a bad thing. Everybody experiences that. Not that I didn't like it. I was just empty. On top of that, UU things didn't resonate with me as much anymore. UU principles, you know, all the good things. I'd stopped reading UU World, which is kind of bad. I mean, that, and on top of that, I'd applied for a job that I thought I really wanted. I was so right for it. Slam dunk. Nope. Did not get it. So it was the trifecta of burnout, loss of faith, and loss of self. It's like, if I'm not that, what am I? And I just kept going along like in a tunnel. At some point, and I know this is being recorded, but this happened when I was at work. Somehow I Googled desolation. And I fell into this tunnel that told me the story that I'm about to tell you that ends into the picnic that you see brilliantly depicted here. That the dresses are, you know, period, and so on. But can you advance? I read of a knight from Spain. His name was Inigo Hernandez de Loyola. He was a knight, and he was an adventurer. He was the 13th of 13 children. So, of a peer, of a nobleman. But when you're the 13th child in even a noble family in 1500-ish, you don't have a lot of career options, okay? So what he liked was to ride his horse and to be an adventurer. And that's what he did. He went to work for the Duke of Najera, and he quickly rose up on the ranks and became his like right-hand man. He was brilliant. He was a knight. He was brilliant in battle. He liked to read about adventure. He liked the El Cid story. He liked the Knights of the Round Table. He liked Charlemagne stories, all these adventures. And he liked to get the girls and, he, you know, all this romantic side projects that he had. However, around age 30, he participated in the Battle of Pamplona. And I don't know how much you know of French and Spanish history. I didn't know this one bit. Where the French king was fighting this duke and other people in Pamplona. The French king of Navarre was trying to take the city of Pamplona, and Inigo, next slide, got hurt. He got a cannonball in his legs and fell off the horse. And look how sad the horse is. Yeah. And at that point, his career was cut short because in 1521, first of all, there was no painkillers. So all the surgeries he had to have, he had live. Secondly, they couldn't fix him up enough to put him back on the horse. So, next slide. He got put, he went home, and look, they were worried about him, his leg is hurt. What he could do, next slide, all he could do was read books. But we've all experienced this at our parents' house when we're adult children that come back. There's never anything to read unless you bring it yourself. That's why I like the Kindle when I go on vacation, because there's old stuff. So that's key. At his parents' house, there were only three books to read. One was the Bible, because 1521. The other one was a book with the stories of the saints. And the other one was The Life of Christ. Now, a little literary interlude here. Both the Life of Christ and the Life of the Saints were written in the Middle Ages, and they were written to put people in a frame of mind to be alongside the saints or alongside Jesus. So the literary style is sort of like, you're one of them, this is what's happening. But Inigo didn't want to hear of it. He's like, oh, don't you have any books of adventures, any things that I can read, People magazine, that kind of thing. But they didn't. And he fell into, you know, what we would call a depression. Because think about it, he didn't have any more career options other than staying at home and being, taken care of by the rest of his family. He was missing out on all the good things that he likes, battles, women, getting his own piece of land. That was huge, right? Because if he was a peer and he won a lot of battles, that was huge. That would have been what he was getting towards, and that was his goal. So what he notices is that he spends a lot of time daydreaming of these things that he can't have anymore. And he comes out of the daydream, and it sucks even worse. So this goes on for quite a while. He had several surgeries. He couldn't walk. Even when he could walk, he couldn't walk easily. And then he finally reads the dang books. Okay? He finally picks up a book and starts reading it. And he finds a different thing. He finds that he gets into these stories that had different heroes. And so I don't know a lot of the lives of the saints, but I'm imagining him reading about St. Francis and the wolf. And what was it like? What was the forest like around St. Francis? Were there other people? What happened to all the other animals? And he starts using his imagination and applying it to the life of the saints, to seeing how Jesus as well did good. And by the way, the reason I'm talking about this is not necessarily that I agree with all of this, but in 1521, there was only the Catholic Church in the Western world. So that's what was available to him. In any case, so he starts daydreaming about the good things, how Jesus did good things for the poor, how the saints helped others. And when he comes out of those daydreams, he feels better. So he starts writing it down. I'm like, okay, I got something. I have something. Let's write down what's happening. And he writes it's a short book. It's about 200 pages in typed up, but of instructions. And he decides, once he's well enough, that he wants to go and tell people about this, because this is a nice new lifestyle. Now, he's not a priest. He's outside of ecclesiastical authority. Keep that in mind. So he goes and he tells his family, that must have been hard. He tells his family, here, look, I don't want anything. I want just my robes. Take my clothes. I'm just going to go and be a mendicant. And his family is like, what are you doing? He's like, well, some saints did this. I found a way to be happy. Let me do this. And so he starts walking around. And it's sunny. And And so he walks with the intention of going to big cities from where he is, but he stops in a place called Manresa, and he meant it for a couple of days. He ends up staying a year because there was a hospital, and what he saw is that he could help with the people in pain because he could relate to the pain of the people. So he gets involved in volunteering in this hospital and stays in a cave, and then where he has visions. And so he decides that the God is speaking to him. I'm going to be a lot less Jesus-y coming up, but I got to tell you the story. So finally he gets out of this town of Manresa, and he has started having friends following him with whom he's sharing these stories and how he did it, how he came out of his funk, how he can help. And he endures a lot of unpleasant things, but that doesn't seem to matter. So he's preaching in a way outside of the church. He wants to go to Jerusalem to help people that are wounded. He wants to tell the Pope. At this point, the church goes, uh-uh, you're not even a priest. You can't do this. And so they start investigating him. And before the Spanish Inquisition, there was the Roman Inquisition. It was less bad than the Spanish Inquisition, but it was still bad because at the end of it, there was a bonfire. So he gets investigated, and somehow he doesn't get killed. And he's exonerated. But in order to avoid coming to clash with the church, he decides to enter seminary at the age of, I think, 40. At this point, it's been almost 10 years since his injury, and he's gone around. But the picnic happens before he becomes a priest. The picnic happens after him and his seven friends, some of whom you might know because a lot of institutions are named after them, like Francis Xavier, for instance. They got together and made the solemn vow to use these the guidance that Iñigo, or now he's called Ignatius, has developed, and form a society that we all know now as the Society of Jesus, because their inspiration was Jesus from the life of the saints. And this is how the Jesuits got started. And I'm amazed, and I have a lot of wonder, that going down that rabbit hole in Google this spring, I was completely enthralled by the origin story of the Jesuit order. So that's part of it. But there is more, and I'm going to tell you a little bit after we do something else. There is more, because I want to know what the instructions said. And I'm going to tell you in a bit. Meantime, if you could all rise in spirit and body and sing the second hymn, How Could Anyone?, number 1053 in the Teal Hymnal. Thank you. be seated. So today's meditation, I want to try something. So let me say a few words before I start the meditation. I don't want to stress anybody out. So if you don't feel like doing what I'm saying in the guided meditation, just sit with your breath. Ignore me. Relax. Anyways, right? But sit comfortably and relax. We all start paying attention to our breath. Do that for a moment. And now I would like you to think about a time in your life when things didn't go your way, didn't go the way you were expecting, wanting, hoping. Again, nothing too traumatic, but it has to be enough to evoke a feeling. Think of this disappointing time and try to think how life would have been if the disappointing time wouldn't be disappointing, if the thing you wanted to happen had happened. Think about that. Follow your breath. And now compare it with the thing that didn't happen and come back to the reality of the thing was that it didn't happen, and watch your feelings as they rise up. Did that feel stuffy, sharp, unendurable, miserable, bad, or just sad? Whatever the feeling is, sit with that feeling for a moment. Breathe and let it go. Let go of the feeling, say goodbye to it, it's gone. Now think of a time when you either did something good or were inspired by somebody. Feel what it was like to be in that moment when either you personally experienced this or you read about it. What must have been like to have all the joy in the world come and concentrate in this moment of goodness. Focus on the happiness of other people. Focus on the actions that permitted that. And how are your feelings about that? Are they good? Do you feel at one with the universe? You feel centered. You feel at least better than before. Sit with that feeling. Breathe. Now let go of that feeling. That is gone too. Follow your breathing. And slowly come back to the room. Start looking around, stretch out, and come back. So, how'd that feel? How weird was that? Anybody? No, nothing. Difficult? Easy? Too slow? Too fast? I can never tell from up here what it's like because I'm guiding the meditation. I can't really do it. Well, what I wanted to do with this meditation exercise, where's the book? is explain a little bit about the spiritual exercises of Ignatius. Because I got into it, right? That was the end of my... and what I realized is that there were a lot of things that resonated with me. Now, I'm not about to give up my life to Jesus, okay? But the spiritual exercises are something that could work. And so the first thing that I want to talk about is two terms that are used in a semi, you know, medieval meaning, consolation and desolation. That's what I was looking up, desolation, when I was desolate. And desolation from the Latin, without the sun, no light. Imagine a desert. Desolation is according to Ignatius, it's a state of mind that turns us into ourselves and drives us down an ever-deepening spiral of self-pity. This is something that really resonated with me because that's what I was doing. It's like, oh, God, my life is over. I didn't... And so in doing so, when I was saying that I was burned out, I cut myself off from community. That is a typical symptom of desolation, according to Ignatius. We want to give up on the things that were important to us. This church is very important to me. I mean, I'm up here. I've done a lot of stuff. But for a while there, I just didn't feel it. Desolation takes over our whole consciousness and obliterates the map, right? We're on a path, right? We're all on a path of spiritual seeking. When you're desolate, you don't see it. It's dark. It's night. Somebody put some sunglasses on you. You're not seeing the landmarks. And heck, it's exhausting. I was tired all the time. I went from not being able to sleep to sleeping too much to not being able to sleep and still being tired. So that's desolation, and that really resonated with me. Now, consolation, it's kind of the opposite of that. Consolation means with the sun, and desolation means without the sun. Consolation is a feeling that it's not just a good feel. Like, there is no confusing consolation and desolation with feeling sad and feeling happy. But consolation is something that moves you to do something. And action is one of the things that is in a lot of the sayings of many Jesuit schools, including the one that Tim Kaine went to, which I don't remember what he said, but there's a lot of action outward. Help others. And that comes from within. The spiritual exercises, when they do them to become Jesuit priests, they take 2 years to do, because you have to be convinced from the heart. This dispels my own preconceived notion that the Jesuits are intellectuals. No, they're not. They spend a lot of time with their own hearts. Now, whether or not it goes well for the individual is irrelevant. The intention of that was, know yourself. Have an inner compass. So consolation lifts our hearts, bonds us to community, and shows the goodness in our lives, and shows us where we could get more goodness in our lives. So, if I can have the next slide. This is from this book by Margaret Silf. It's called Inner Compass, and it shows what the spiritual exercises do, and they have a flower that you planted a seed and grew. Right? Wander. There are concentric circles where you are studying. When you do these exercises, you learn about yourself. In your life, there are three, you can envision it as three concentric circles. The first one is your outside circumstances, like your parents, where you are, where you live, your work, your spouse, your children, your dog, that. The givenness of the facts and circumstances of my life, the things I cannot change, in the sense of, even if I change my job, I had another job before. That doesn't change. My past doesn't change. It is what I've done. The center one is how I am, and these are things that have to do with how you respond to stresses, with how you respond to, you know, are you angry? Are you a knee-jerk reaction type of person? Are you quiet? And the center is the center of your true self. The idea of the spiritual exercises is that if you understand how things affect you and what things are important, you can always know who you really are under any circumstance. And by contrast, if you think that your life is just the outer circle, how many of us have said, oh, you know, things are going badly, maybe I should get a new job, a new spouse, a new dog, a new cat, and then I'll feel a new pair of shoes, and then I'll feel better. And nothing changes. The idea is that you can't grow a seed, the seed of your true self, if you keep planting it around that larger circle. In reality, is that you have to examine your circumstances, and if you get enough inner understanding of yourself, that if you let things go, that you'll be happier, or you'll be more able to live your real life. To exemplify these three circles, where you are, this comes from a last page of this book, and I really like this. Where you are, however unchosen, is the place of blessing. How you are, however broken, is the place of grace. And who you are in your becoming is your place in the universe. I've already started stitching that, Casey, by the way. but basically, what the spiritual exercises do is they are exercises to bring you to the center of yourself through contemplation, meditation, and because they're Catholic-based, prayer. But that's what intrigues me. Because every time there's a contemplation, meditation, prayer type of spiritual exercise, I always want to see if I can take Jesus out of it and they still work. And that is what I spent my summer doing, trying to see how this can fit a UU faith. And guess what? Ignatius was a guy on earth, like you and me. So yes, it can work. I'm not done yet. Let me tell you how I've decoded the spiritual exercises summary and removed more hardcore God and Jesus-y references. Spiritual exercises are discovering who I really am, directing myself. I've removed the toward God, but if you believe in God, you can direct yourself toward God. I just have a different concept of God. Noticing grace in my life. Noticing grace in my life is the thing. Responding to the movements of my heart. Discovering the nature of my deepest desire. I didn't have to change it one iota in these three. Those are they. And they're there, and that's how they are. And instead of seeking God's will, I said, letting go. It sounds a little 12-steppy, but let go. Let go of the baggage of what happened. Move inward from the outer circle. Becoming free of all that distracts me from my deepest desire, true self. connecting my lived experience with my meaningful sources. So that's one key for the Jesuits, is like connecting my most meaningful experiences to the life of Jesus, right? The Jesuits. But you can do that with whoever resonates with you, whatever teaching, responding to the universe, and finding good in all things. The spiritual exercises take 2 years to complete in normal seminary situations for the priests. I've started translating this book into UU terms, but one of the things that the Ignatius and his friends did was get together and talk about it. So I want to finish my sermon with a request. Anybody want to join me doing spiritual exercises some point in the fall? I have a sign-up sheet. All right, well, since we're all charged up, last hymn is the Fire Commitment. Hit it. So the benediction today are the words of St. Ignatius. Go forth and set the world on fire. Amen.